We're on the bottom of Samachem at Beis. We started the Mishnah yesterday, and we're talking about somebody called a Kitea. He translates it in English as an amputee. And the question is, he has what we'll call a kav, a wooden foot. What we have to emphasize, as we mentioned at the end of yesterday's shiur, is that it's not a foot that's primarily for leaning on, but rather it's to replace, to look like a foot. He has other contraptions that will keep his weight up. And the Mishnah wants to know, what's the status of this kav, of this wooden foot? Is it considered a manul? It's a shoe, and it's a garment, and he's allowed to wear it? Or shall we say no, since he's not putting his weight on it, he has other pieces of wood that carry his weight, and therefore it's not a manul, it's not primarily a foot. So Rabbi Meir, according to this particular presentation, is the one who allows it. And here we're on the top of Samach Vav Hamid Aleph. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, prohibits it. This is the girsa that we have. The Gemara is going to question, maybe the names should be switched around. And it's Dafka Rabbi Meir who's the Machmir, and Rabbi Yossi is the maker. We'll get to that soon. Now, v'im yeshlo beis kibul k'sisin tameh. Sometimes they would bore a cavity into the wooden foot in order to make it more comfortable. They would place different kinds of cushions inside this cavity. That makes the wooden foot into what's called a beis kibul. Normally, if a wooden utensil is flat, it doesn't have a receptacle element to it, it's not mekabel tumah. But if you dig out some sort of a cavity for receptacle purposes, then it is mekabel tumah. And that's going to be the case of a wooden foot that has a base kibul for k'sisin. K'sisin are these different types of cushions and cloths and maybe cotton that he puts in there to make it more comfortable, less of a pressure. Now the Mishnah goes on to something called smochos shalo. Smochos are, now we're talking about a person who never has no legs, and he uses some sort of a leather support for his lower leg. And in this case, he puts his weight on the smochos. That's what the word smocho comes from. The shoresh of the word is samuch, somech. He leans on them. And that comes under a different category with regard to a zav or a zava, which is called medris tumah. Medris tumah is any sort of leaning or sitting or lying where you put the zav or the zava puts their weight on something, and that's called tumas midras. And during the course of Masechet Shabbos, we're going to have a lot to say about tumas midras. In any event, this kind of leather support, because it supports his body, therefore it is subject to tmeim midras, tumas midras. The good news is that because now he's using these smochos, I have a diagram of it in the other Gemara, maybe I'll show it to you. Anyway, because he uses these smochos to put his weight down on it, therefore the good news is that it has the status of a minol. It's a garment, it's a shoe, yotzen ben b'shabbos. He can go out with it on Shabbos, it's not considered a masa. And nichnosim bohem bazora. And that's a mistake. The Gemara is going to correct this mistake, because nichnosim ben bazora makes no sense here, as we have the text, because the Gemara in Brachos establishes that you're not allowed to enter into the azora, otherwise known as the chatzer, in the Beis HaMikdash, wearing shoes. And the Kohanim, for example, didn't wear shoes. Now, in this case, if we assume that because he has no legs, he uses these smochos as support for his body, and therefore it has the good news that it has the status of a shoe, and he could wear it in Rishus HaRab on Shabbos, then he would not be allowed to wear it in the Azara. And the Gemara is going to correct the Girsa. Then we have a third category, which is called Kisei Usmochu Shalo. And here, what the manufacturers used to create for these individuals who couldn't use their legs is a certain kind of a chair. It's a small chair, and it had supports. And these supports would allow him to project himself, so to speak, and move forward. However, this is not something that you could call a shoe. It's just supports for a chair. And therefore, ein yotzim behem b'shabbos. In this case, it's not considered a malbush, but rather it's a masa. So these supports for his legs would be considered a burden. V'ein nichnosim behem b'azara. And then now we have to deal with that. I mean, if it's not a manual, why does the Mishnah establish that he's not allowed to go into the chatzer, into the azara with them? And that has to be understood. And finally, we have a phrase called lokitmin. The Gemara is going to have three different interpretations as to what these lokimtin are. We'll go with Rashi's simple pshat, which is one of the three in the Gemara, and that is that these were masks that were worn by adults to sort of play with the children, and tahorin v'ein yotzim behem, which means they don't have a status of a kli, they don't have a status of a malbush. Therefore, the good news is they're not makabel tuma, but the bad news is that you can't wear them out on Shabbos. And I was thinking in our contemporary situation, whether or not, if there was no Eruv, would we be allowed to wear the masks out in Rishus HaRabim that we're wearing now? And perhaps one could say that if the laws are very strict, then you're not allowed to take them off by virtue of the state law, that itself, or for example, from the perspective that if you're protecting yourself, you remember we had certain cases where you wear things for therapeutic purposes to protect your health, and you would never even dream of taking them off, maybe we could find a heter. But Baruch Hashem, today we have an Erev, so we don't have to worry about this. But it's an interesting question in and of itself. Where do you fit masks? And according to one opinion, lokitmin is the plural of masks. Now, at this point, the Gemara is going to go into a long discussion about who's the machmir and who's the maker between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir in our Reisha of the Mishnah, in the case of the wooden foot, which we call the Kav. Amale Ravel Rav Nachman, Hechi Tnan. How did you have the Mishnah? Did you have it the way we have it, or did you have it the other way? Amale Lo Yadana, Hilchas Amai, and how do we paskin? Amale Rav Nachman responded, Lo Yadana. But Itmar, Amar Shmuel has a definite text in the Mishnah, and he has Rabbi Meir as the one who says Ein Hakitea. Right, in our text of the Mishnah, it says Hakitea Yotze. Shmuel's text had the word Ein Hakitea Yotze, Divrei Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yossi was the one who was matir it. Just the opposite. V'chein Omer Avhuna Ein Hakitea. So it means that it was Rabbi Yossi who was the Mekil, and Rabbi Meir was the Machmir. And Omer Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef made a comment on this whole, the Omer Shmuel Ein Akitea, the Omer Rav Huna Ein Akitea. According to both Shmuel and Rav Huna, we have to change the girsa in our Mishnah, and the proper text should read that Rabbi Meir was the Machmir, and Rabbi Yossi is the Mekil. Anan Nami Nisne Ein Akitea. In other words, Rav Yosef wants to rely on the double sheet of both Shmuel and Rav Huna. However, Maskif La Rava Bar Shilo, Rava has a question on Rav Yosef. He says, Lo shmielahu hod masni le Rav Chanan bar Rava lechia bar Rav kami de Rav bikitona de be Rav. And don't you accept this particular transmission that says, Eina kitea yotze bekavshalo divrei Rabbi Meir for Rav Yosi Matir. So far it sounds like the reformulation of the Mishnah, switching around the names, the Shitos, of Shmuel and Rav Huna, but we can't stop in the middle of a sentence. Why? Because apparently when this presentation was being made, Rav, the great Tana Rav, was present, and Machvile Rav Epoch. Rav was in the middle of Kriyat Shema, so he couldn't interrupt himself, but he motioned with his hands. That's called Machvile Epoch. Epoch means just the other way around, which means that Rav was supporting the text and the version of our Mishnah, which means that it was Rabbi Meir who allowed the Kav, and Rabbi Yossi was the Machmir. And Omer of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, I want you to have a memory device, Simona Samach Samach. In other words, it should read Rabbi Yossi, there's a Samach in Rabbi Yossi's name, Oser, and there's a Samach in the word Oser. And this is the way we should remember it, that Rabbi Meir is the Machmir. Now, keep in mind that this issue about the Kav, this wooden leg, which is not really used to support the weight of the amputee, is relevant to many different areas of halacha. First and foremost, for our purposes, is the question about whether he could wear it on Shabbos. If it's a minal, then it's a malbush, it's something that you wear, and it's permissible. We can go a step further. Once you elevate it to the status of a minal, then it is makabel tuma. And in that case, tumas medris, because a shoe is something that the person who's wearing the shoe puts his weight on the shoe, and that would be in a case of a zavar zavah, tumas medris. Now we have another nafkamina, and that's what we're going to study now, this nan, and this is a Mishnah in Masechta Yevamos, and we're talking about chalitza. There's an entire chapter in Masechta Yevamos that's dedicated to the laws of chalitza, which means that if the Yavam refuses to marry the Yavama, then she takes off his shoe, and the question is, what constitutes a shoe? A shoe for chalitza is called a mina'ol. Okay, so fine. Now we have the Mishnah that says, Cholza besandal shena shalo. If all things are equal, ideally, this shoe should be owned by the Yavam, right, the brother of the deceased. However, the Mishnah points out that in a fallback position with the Eved, if the sandal, this shoe, is not owned by the Yavam, that's fine. The chalitza is still valid, which means that she can get married. Number two, sandal shel eitz. Usually a sandal is made of leather, but if it was made of wood, or if, let's say, he put the wrong shoe on the wrong foot, o shel smol b'yamin. For example, the shoe that's normally worn on the left foot was put on the right foot. In all these three cases, chalitza kshera. Although, l'chatchil, that's not the perfect way of doing it, but as a fallback position, it's acceptable. V'amrinon, man tana, and we say, who is the tana who holds that a wooden shoe is considered a minol? And that's going to bring us back to the wooden shoe of our Mishnah, because if you remember the kav, which the amputee is wearing in the reisha of our Mishnah, is made out of wood. And therefore, Meshmuel, Rabbi Meir, he, the one who would validate chalitza with a wooden shoe, as we saw in the Mishnah in Yevamos, is none other than Rabbi Meir. And why is that? Disnan, we learned in our Mishnah here in Shabbos, Hakitea is Yotze Bekav Shalo, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that the status of the Kav for the Kitea is that of a Minol, and therefore he allows you to wear it in Rishus HaRabim. And therefore he would presumably validate it for Chalitza. It is a Minol. It constitutes, qualifies as a Minol. Rabbi Yossi Oser. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds that a wooden shoe is not a Minol. It's not usual. It's not general. Therefore it would be prohibited on Shabbos in Rishus HaRabim, and it would be invalid for Chalitza if it's not a Minol. Chalitza requires a Minol. So we see clearly that Shmuel had the Girsa of our Mishnah the way we have it, which is the way that Rav indicated with his hands that you should turn it around, meaning turn it around back to the way we have it. Rabbi Meir is the Mekil, and he validates the wooden foot, the Kav, as a Minol, and Rabbi Yossi is the Machmir. So we see, therefore, that Shmuel changed his mind. Although initially he had switched around the gears of our Mishnah, making the Rabbi Meir into the Oser, but at the end of the day, Shmuel accepted Rav's version, and it is in fact Rabbi Yossi who's the Machmir, the way we have it actually in our Mishnah. V'af Rav Huna Hadar Bey. And even Rav Huna, who's the second Tana, who switched around the text of our Mishnah, he also changed his mind, made a full swing circle back to our Mishnah as we have it, the Sanya we learned in a Braisa. Now, we're going to talk about something that is made of straw, and it's worn on the feet. Now, again, you know, maybe if you're going out to a swimming pool, you'll wear straw on your feet. You know what I'm saying? But that's not a shoe. That's not a minnow. However, there are certain professionals who actually wore a straw sandal that covered their shoe. So the shoe was made of leather, and they would cover it because of their profession with straw. And who fits that category? That's called a sayadin. Sayadin is the plural of a sayad. Sayad is a description of sid. Sid is plaster. A sayad is a person who plasters. It's a whole profession. You could ask my wife about this. She'll tell you about this. It's not so easy to find a good sayad, even in modern Hebrew. In any event, what's the status, asks the Braisa, of the sandal, that straw sandal that's used by the sayad, because he doesn't want to get the sid on his shoes, that would ruin his shoes if the plaster falls on his shoes. So he covers his shoes. There's something similar to galoshes. You know, some people wear galoshes on their feet. Most people wear galoshes on top of their shoe. My father said that back in the old country where he came from, they called them lopches. I don't know what language that is. Maybe it's Russian or Polish. And that's what they wore on top of the shoes when the season was rainy. And the Braisa teaches us that Tomei Medris, that this straw sandal has the status of a minol, and therefore it's susceptible to Tumas Medris. He puts his weight on it. And Isha Choletzespo. Therefore, once you've upgraded it to the status of a Minol, then it can be used for Chalitz. And the good news is Yotzim Ben B'Shabbos. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. And this is all Rabbi Akiva. Now, this issue about the status of a straw sandal is going to be relevant also to a wooden shoe, because both straw and even wood were unusual. And wooden shoe is going to be the subject of Kav in the Reish of our Mishnah. So when this Braisa quotes Rabbi Akiva, it's very important for us to know who agreed with Rabbi Akiva and who disagreed. The Braisa records lo hodu lo, that his colleagues did not accept his kula, his leniency. However, there's another Braisa that says hodu lo, that his colleagues actually accepted his opinion, his kula, allowing in the case of a straw shoe to be upgraded to the status of a minol. Now, who are those who agreed? Who are those who disagreed with Rabbi Akiva's leniency? Omar Rav Huna, man hodulo, let's identify the colleague of Rabbi Akiva who agreed with him, Rabbi Meir, man lo hodulo, Rabbi Yossi. So based on this underlying equation between a wooden shoe and a straw shoe, we can see here that Rav Huna had the girsa that we have in our mishnah that Rabbi Meir is the mekil, and therefore he upgrades the status of the kav, the wooden foot, to that of a minol. He would therefore agree with Rabbi Akiva in the brisa regarding the straw sandal, elevating that, like the wooden shoe in our mishnah, the wooden kav, to the status of a minol, and allowing you to go out Rishus HaRabim with this kav. Now, we're going to see later on that the sayad, this plasterer, would very often wear this straw sandal over his shoe, even when he was no longer involved in his plastering. And that means that at certain times he actually wore it as a shoe. But man loho dulo Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is in this particular version that Rabbi Yossi is the machbir. He's what I call the extremist view. What do I mean by the extremist? He's not willing to say, well, on occasion we have an amputee who wears this wooden foot that therefore has the din of a shoe. We have occasion where sometimes the plasterer will wear a straw shoe. No. That doesn't cut the mustard as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned. Rabbi Yossi wants to know exactly whether it's a minnow or not. Is this something that in most circumstances you would wear as a shoe? And a straw shoe is unusual. A wooden leg or a wooden shoe is unusual, and therefore it's not a minnow. But we see again that Rav Huna rescinded his change in the girsa, and at the end of the day he went back to agree full swing that our mishnah as we have it, Rabbi Meir is the mekil and Rabbi Yossi is the machmir. Om Rav Yosef, man lo hodulo. I want to add another Tana into the Cholent over here, another Tana who disagrees with Rabbi Akiva and would therefore accept Rabbi Yossi's Chumrah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Now, we're going to try to figure out a Mishnah in Masech de Kalim and the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Now again, let's just review. If something is Makabel Tumah, that's a Chumrah in Hilchas Tumah, but it's a Kula both in Hilchas Shabbos and in Hilchas Chalitza. So if I tell you that a particular type of a shoe is considered Tar, it means it's not Makabel Tumah, then although that's good news as far as Tumah is concerned, it's a big Kula, and we're going to see Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's Kula, but nevertheless, it's a chumrah as far as the status of a minol vis-a-vis Shabbos or chalitza. So we have this mishnah that speaks about, again, something that's made of straw. In this case, it's not a shoe that's made of straw, but rather a mat, which is otherwise known as either a machzeles, that's one word, more of a Hebrew type of word, and then there's something called a kaveres. And the Mishnah in Kalim records a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, which is a classic machlokes if you know the Mishnayos, in which this kind of a mat that's made of straw, there's also something called a shfoferes shel kanim a reeds, and it's also a kind of a straw substance, or kash is a straw. And they used it as a tube. Okay, there's a whole discussion here about exactly what they did with this straw mat, whether they lied on it, and therefore it's Makabel Tumas Medrash, and this small kind of a basket called a straw tube was used as a basket to contain things, a container, a receptacle, and therefore it might have the status of a kli, and it's mekabel tuma. And Rabbi Akiva says it's tummy. What we're interested really is the case of machzelis. Why? Because the case of machzelis, which is a mat that's made, in this case, of kash, of straw, is something which, according to Rabbi Akiva, since he puts his weight when he steps on the mat, even though it's made of a substance called the straw, then it has the status of Kabbalah's Tumah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, tar. If it's made of straw, then that's not something that we can consider a Tumas Medris, and therefore it's tar. And Rav Yosef identifies this machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri as the same machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and those who disagreed with Rabbi Akiva. In the case of the sandal of straw that was worn on top of his shoes by the plasterer. Now, once we have Rabbi Akiva's opinion as far as the shoe worn by the plasterer, Omar Mar, sandal shel sayodim. Just one second, did I skip anything? Just one second, make sure. Okay, fine. Sandal shel sayodim, tame medris. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, this sandal that's made of straw, it's not really a shoe when you think about it. That's Gemara's question here. Why does Rabbi Akiva identify it as a shoe, and it's mekabel tumas medris? Halavli lucha avdi. The reason why he covers his shoes with this sandal that's made of straw is to protect his shoes. He's not interested in wearing it as a shoe. Omar Rav Acha bar Rav Ula, shekein asayud mitayel bo ad shemagia lebeiso. He walks in this sandal made of straw on his way back from work till he reaches his house, ad shemagia lebeiso. So you see that he now, by walking with it, outside of the context of the plaster, he's using it in a way that doesn't protect his shoes, and he's walking on it. And therefore it has the status of a minol, and it's mekabel tumas medris, according to Rabbi Akiva. And the implication is that if this plasterer would never wear these shoes outside of the context of his work, then for sure, even Rabbi Akiva would say that it's not subject to Tumas Medris. It's not a minol. Now we go back to the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that sometimes a wooden foot could be considered a kli kibul. It has a base kibul. And that's the case of ksisin. In yesh lo base kibul ksisin tame. And now it becomes not pshute kliates, but kliates that have a base kibul, as we discussed in the Mishnah, because it creates a cavity into which he puts this wooden leg, or perhaps the stump of his leg. Omar Abaye, tomei tumas mes, v'ein tomei medris. Abaye has the position that a wooden foot, even if it has this receptacle, that cavity that we discussed, which is called a base kibul for ksisin, and it is therefore a kli, and it's mekabel tumas mes, if let's say it finds itself in an oel with a corpse, but eino ein tomei medris, and Rav Amar af tomei medris. Now, again, what we're talking about is an unusual set of circumstances. When you look at this wooden foot that has the receptacle in it, you know, you say to yourself, well, who's going to wear this? But the answer is that a person who needs it, you know, Nebuch, he doesn't have a foot, so he's going to use it. So from Rava's perspective, the second opinion here, that's okay. Once it has a function and it supports the weight of the amputee, that gives it the status of Tumas Midras. And Abai puts the emphasis on the aesthetic element here. He wears this wooden foot in order to cover up, so to speak, you know, instead of having just air, he has like a leg, but he's not using it to support his body weight, and therefore it's not susceptible to Tumas Medrus. Omar Rava, Rava says, Mimo immediately, I have a source from the Mishnah in Masechta Beitza that something that occasionally is used for the weight of a person has the status of Tumas Medrus, even if that's not usually what you do with it. And he speaks in the Mishnah about an Agola Shel Katan. We're talking about a toy that you give a child, you know, like a little wagon where the child puts a booba in English, a baby, you know, a doll. So you have a wagon that's primarily for a doll. And yet the Mishnah says, Tmeya Medrus. Since occasionally the child is put into this agala, this wagon, I guess it's large enough for the size of a child, and therefore it bears the weight of the child, in such a case, even though it's only occasional, then it is upgraded to the status of Tumas Medrus, and a wooden foot, since sometimes, on occasion, it's used to support the weight of this cripple. Again, he has other appendages for the supporting his weight, but sometimes he needs the extra weight of this leg. And again, even though that's only occasional, Rava's opinion, based on this Mishnah in Beitza, is that occasional is enough to upgrade it to the status of Tumas Medrus. Abayomer, no. Don't make this equation and draw conclusions from this Agola Shel Katan. Why? Hasam Samach Al Iluye. There, when they manufacture this kind of a wagon, they do so for two purposes. Number one, to serve as just kind of a toy, and number two, to actually put the child inside the wagon. But hacha lo samach iluye. But when they manufacture this wooden foot, this kav, they don't do so for the purpose of the weight, to support the weight of the amputee. They do it for aesthetic purposes. Although occasionally Abai has to admit he does use it to put his weight on it. But that's not enough for Tumas Medrus. It's got to be primary and not occasional. Omar Abai Mino immediately, I have a proof to support my position from a brisa that speaks about a walking stick, what we call a cane. In Hebrew, it's called a makel shels canim. Now, a walking stick is generally used in order to balance a person, or to make sure that he doesn't, end up going off the street into a lower part. But occasionally, the elderly will put his weight on the stick, on the walking stick, and it will really support his weight. So what's the status in Tumas Medrus of the walking stick? Well, the Brisa says, Makil shel zkenim tahar miklum. It's not susceptible to Tuma. Not even to Tumas Medrus, even though occasionally the elderly will put his weight on this makel. And this is a kash on Rava, because according to Rava, the makel shel zkenim should be subject to Tumas Medrus, because occasionally he does put his weight on it. For Rava, and Rava will answer, hasam, in the case of the walking stick, and here we turn to Daf Samach Vavam in Beis, le tarutze sugya avide. No, it's meant to keep him balanced, that he doesn't go too far here, too far there. It's never really meant to bear the weight of his body, and therefore it's not subject to Tumas Medrus. In contrast, but hacha, in the case of the kav, the wooden foot, there, lismoch iluyehu davide, it was created not just for cosmetic and aesthetic purposes, but also to support his weight, v'samach alei, and in fact, that's what he does with it. The Mishnah speaks now about chairs and leg supports for the lower legs, and that's called Tmei Medrus. The Mishnah says about them, again, to use the language of the Mishnah, Smuchos, I believe, is they are susceptible to Tumas Medrus. But, Ein Yotzim Bahem B'Shabbos, Ve'Nichnosim Bahem La'Zorah. So the Gemara says that we have three dinim, and two out of the three seem to make sense and are consistent. The third is a little problematic, because the first two dinim of Tumas Medrash and Ein Yotzim Ebeshabbos take you in a certain direction, and then it says Einich Nosim Behen Lazora, meaning that it really has the din of a minol. Tani Tane Kame de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a brice that was taught in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan, and there it says Nichnasim Bahem Lazora. Just like we said that Tmeim Medris, which means that he bears the weight on it, it has the status of a shoe, is if that be the case, then we should allow him. I'm sorry, just the other way around. Since it says Ein Yotzin Bahem B'Shabbos, it means it doesn't have the status of a shoe. And if it doesn't have the status of a shoe, because these things are only used to project him, therefore Nichnasim Bahem Azara, he's allowed to go into the Azara with them. In other words, these leg supports are not considered shoes. They support his legs, but they don't separate his foot from the ground. Amaleis Rabbi Yochanan says, Ani shoneh, but I have a braisa that tells me that isha choletzes bo, that these kinds of leg supports, for people who can't use their legs, nevuch, have the status of a middle, and therefore they are valid for chalitza. And if they're valid for chalitza and they have the status of a middle, then we go back to our mission that says, Ein nichnasim bohem lazara. V'at amrit nichnasim, and you have a braisa that says you're allowed to go into the azara with these, and therefore tni, you should reformulate the braisa. Ein nichnasim ba'em lazara. They do have the status of a minol. Now we get to the three opinions as to how to define luktamin. What's luktamin? Tahora. Meaning, it's not called a kli. It's not something that protects the body. It's not an ornament for the body. It's something external to the body. And therefore, it doesn't have the status of a kli. My lukitmon, what are these things? Amar Rabbi Avo, chamora de achva. Okay, they used to make donkeys for purposes of, you know, fake donkeys, like, you know, like a Pinocchio kind of thing, in order to entertain people, like puppets kind of thing. So these were wooden donkeys, and he has a whole discussion here about what they did. The clowns were street performers. They would incorporate this device into their acts. The donkey would be suspended between the performer's legs, and it would give him the impression that he was riding on the donkey, when actually it was hanging from his shoulders. Okay, so you have to go to clown school for this. And Rava Bar Papa Amar Kshire. These are stilts. And these are stilts that are used to raise the body up from muddy areas. And again, since they're not usually worn as shoes, they're just wooden implements, therefore they don't have the status of what we call a base kibul. And therefore, they're not subject to Tumas Medrus. Rava Baravun Amar Prame. These are masks that we use to play with the children. And once again, they cannot be worn outside on Shabbos because they don't have the status neither of a minol nor of a malbush. The Mishnah says, Habanim Yotzim Biksharim. Boys can go out on Shabbos with knots. Okay, we're going to study today something called knot therapy. So for the physicians amongst us, this is, you have to listen very carefully, because for your next prescription, you're definitely going to prescribe for young boys knots. I shouldn't say physicians, actually. I should say psychiatrists. Ubnei malachim bezugim. And the princes are allowed to go out with gold bells on their clothing. That was considered a beautiful ornament, and really, v'chaladim. It's not just princes, eladibru chacham bahove, the chachamim use the commonplace, but anyone could wear these beautiful bells that are attached to his garments. Mike Sharim, what are these knots that a father ties around his young son. Omar Av, Omar Ado Borio, Omar Av Nachman Bar Boro, Omar Av Rashi Bar Ovin, Omar Av Yehuda, Kishure Pua. Okay, these are hung around the necks, and they come from a certain kind of a plant called the Pua plant. And they had curative properties. Omar Abaye, Omerli Aim, right, the word Aim, which literally means mother, but in this context doesn't mean a mother, because Abaye didn't have a mother. His mother unfortunately died at childbirth, but he had a woman who raised him as if she were his mother. Tlasa Mukme. That now there are different ways of doing this knot therapy. There's the lower, then the middle, and then the higher, the best therapy. Tlosa, if you only have three knots, then that will make sure that the illness doesn't get worse. Chamisha, if you have five knots, masu, that's already healing. And shiva, if you have seven knots, that's going to work even to ward off the evil witchcraft of the kshafim. Miley means it's effective. Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Vehu, okay, now, I'm not exactly sure about the biological or medical virtues of this kind of a plant. He calls it in English a madder plant, M-A-D-D-R. He has a whole discussion about where it grows and what it looks like. So those who are into natural medicine, alternative medicine, they might want to learn more about the madder plants that were hung around the neck as a cure, and they were tied with knots. And we had the three, the five, and the seven, right? He says, "Vahudul chazi leshimsha v'siara." These knots are only viable if they were not exposed neither to sunlight to moonlight, v'lo chazi mitra, and they were not exposed to rain, v'lo shmiole kol barzala, and they didn't hear any sounds of metal clanking, v'kal tarnagolosa, they didn't hear the sound of a rooster crowing, v'kal nigre, or the sounds of footsteps. So again, you know, you're going to have to raise this matter and make sure that the knots are the best and they're pure, like it's almost like a paraduma, you know, you gotta watch it carefully in order for it to be effective. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Nafal Pusa Bibira. Once the matter knots made out of this kind of a plant, have fallen into a pit, then forget it. It loses its viability. Once it's in a pit, then it's going to be subject to sunlight and moonlight. You know, it's not protected. It might even hear, chas v'shalom, the sounds of a cockle-doodle-doo. Now the Gemara wants to know, my iria bonim, what kind of disease are we talking about that the Mishnah says a father is allowed to tie these knots of the matter plant around the neck of his son for curative purposes? And why is it boys? Afilu bonus nami. Why can't it cure women as well, girls as well? Furthermore, my iriyak tanim. If it's therapeutic, what's the limitation here for children? Afilu gedolim nami. Even mature adults can enjoy the benefit of these matter knots, of this knot therapy. Elamaik sharim. But rather, Gemara now gets rid of therapy and replaces it with psychiatry. Ki hadi Omar Ovin bar Huna, Omar Rav Chama bar Guria, ben sheyeshlo gaguim al Aviv. Now, the way I understand this is the following: a father and a son, a young child, are very close to each other. But the father very often has to leave on a long trip. I mean, in Chazal's time, you know, if you're a businessman, sometimes you would leave for 6 months. That was traumatic for this young boy. And what he needs to do is not therapy. And this is to neutralize or vitiate melancholy, literally depression. That this young child could go into depression. Now you see something amazing about this Gemara. Again, I can't tell you, I'm not a psychiatrist, whether this is true or not, but that sometimes, you know, Freud would certainly buy into this, that sometimes traumatic experiences that a young child goes through could have an impact long term. So psychotherapy takes you back to your early childhood and you re-experience some of those traumatic experiences of early childhood. In this case, the son is so attached to his father that when his father leaves, the child has, again, whatever the word depression would be for a young child. So in order to offset this gaguim, this depression, this melancholy, is you have to do a very, very strict kind of, the rules here, regulations are very, very strict about how to do this not therapy. Again, the psychiatrist will tell you, we have a diploma in not therapy. Number one, no tail ritsua, you have to take a strap. Where do you get this strap from? Ah, it's got to be mimino. It's got to come from a shoe. But which shoe? It's got to come from the right shoe, shel yamin. Not only that, you've got to tie it on the boy's arm. Which arm? On his left arm, kosher lo b'smolo. It's beginning to sound like tefillin. Well, it's going to have to sound like tefillin. Because Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok v'simonech b'tefillin. It's almost the same as tefillin, where you take the straps in your right hand and you tie them onto your left hand. And that's what you have to do for this knot therapy. Vichilufa sakanta. And if you get this wrong, whoa, that's really dangerous. So make sure that you get the strap that you take off from your right shoe and you tie it onto his left arm. And this is going to somehow do away with melancholy. Now, based on this, the Mefarshim say that this melancholy is typical of boys that are very attached to their father, and the father very often goes away on a long trip. It is not it's not typical of a girl. The girl is more attached perhaps to her mother, and the boy to his father. I'm not always sure that that's true, but as a general rule, that's the Gemara's assumption. Omar Ovin Bar Huna, Omar Avchama Bar Guria, Sachufe kosa atibure bishabsa vishapir dummy. Now, those of us, and I include myself here, who have stomach issues, will very often need something hot. What's the word I'm looking for that you put on your stomach sometimes? Anybody have it for me? You know, that rubber thing, what's it called? You put hot water into it? A hot water bottle? Okay, we'll call it a hot water bottle. Now, a hot water bottle could be very good, but it could be very dangerous. Because if, heaven forbid, there's really boiling hot water on it, it opens up. I mean, it could be... But the Gemara says we're going to allow you, and even on Shabbos, to take a kasa. Kasa is a cup. And schufe means to invert it, atibure, tibure, the tabur, is the belly button, and you're allowed to do this on Shabbos. So you fill the cup with hot liquid, and apparently the cup retains the heat, even after you pour out the liquid, because you don't want to put hot liquid on your belly, and you take this cup that's now hot and you put it on your stomach and it relieves some of your stomach pain. And even though this might be considered refuah, but nevertheless, it's permitted on Shabbos. And the reason for that is because this kind of refuah is not something that could lead to shchikas samimonim. Shchikas samimonim is when I use different herbs or drugs for a refuah. But if I'm using a physical object here, a cup, that's not included in this gzera. And I think we pointed out in the past that the gzera of refuah is very, very limited. There are such conditions to violate. There are many, many kulos. There's another discussion here about this cup, this inverted cup, as to whether or not this is called uvda dechol. However, uvda dechol is usually mutter b'makom tsar, in order to, in this case, an ailment for stomach pains. V'yomar oven bar huna amra. Again, the same tradition, the same transmission. Mutter losuch shemen umelach b'shabbos. You're allowed to take these natural substances, oil or salt, and you are allowed to use them on your feet, for example, in order to relieve certain kinds of discomfiture. The Gemara actually talks about a case of someone who's drunk, and he wants to get rid of this state of intoxication, and he used to rub with the palm of his hand oil or salt on the sole of his feet. And that's how he would snap out of his state of drunkenness. Ki hodr av huna mi bei rav, v'rav mi bei rabbi chia. Well, Rav Huna came from the house of Rav, or Rav came from the house of Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia mi bei rav. Ki avi mevasme, if they were drunk, maise mishcha milcha, they would bring salt, they would bring oil, perhaps a mixture of the two, or maybe one or the other, v'shayfi luhu, and they would smear it, legavyasa didaihu, on the palm of their hand, dechari'ainu, and then from the palm of their hand, they would smear it on the soles of their feet, v'amri. Now, here we get into, we're on the entry of a long discussion, which is called Lechashim. Lechashim means different kinds of pronouncements, that somehow when you pronounce something, then it's like a prayer perhaps, and it has a medicinal impact. So what was that prayer? That prayer was Ki hechi detzil hab mishcha. Tzil means v'lashon tzalul. Tzalul is something that's thin, right? So you, for example, when you talk about blood, right? So sometimes blood is very thick, and sometimes it's tzalul, it's very thin. Like tzir, for example, if you ever look at a steak, you'll see that very thin kind of reddish liquid. So the oil has the power to thin something out. Is leitzil chamre, the wine, the planya bar planesa, it should thin out the wine, meaning the impact of the wine, because the person is drunk. Now it's interesting, planya bar planesa. So he's praying on behalf of so-and-so, the son of his mother. This is the source, by the way, that in tfilos, we always mention the mother. And there's a long discussion about why we mention the mother. V'lo, if let's say he can't get a hold of neither salt nor oil, Maisi should bring Shia. Shia is clay. Didana. Vishari le b'maya. He should take the seal of a barrel, which is made of clay, soak it in water, and he should declare, Ki hechi deleitzel hai Shia, just like this seal is getting thin because of the water that it's soaking in, leitzel chamre de planya bar planusa. So the wine should thin out. In other words, it should no longer have that impact of drunkenness. The Omar Ravin bar Avhuna bar Huna Omar Avcham bar Guria muta lechanek b'shabes. Okay, there's something called a different kind of therapy. We had knot therapy. Now we have something called strangling therapy. And this has to do with someone whose neck bone is out of shape and it's penetrating towards his throat. And what they would do is sort of stretch out the neck. That was called a strangling therapy. And this is allowed on Shabbos. Some say it's allowed on Shabbos because there's no gzera of shchika samimonim. And some say that because of the extreme pain of someone whose neck bone has slipped out of shape, in order to do this therapy, which we call the strangling therapy, in order to make sure that his neck gets back, that we have to allow because he's like a chola, he's like a person who's very ill. The Omar oven. I'm just gonna try it again, because otherwise tomorrow it's really a rough. You know, tomorrow, I don't know. I'm tempted to tell you tomorrow that you shouldn't come, because I have trouble with Daf Samach Zayin. I mean, different kinds of therapies and so forth and so on. Anyway, but Lafufe Yenuka B'Shamsa Shapir Dummy. Okay, the bones of a child, especially a newborn baby, sometimes were a little bit out of shape, and you needed to do some sort of a therapy in order to straighten its bones. And what they did was they wrapped the infant in a certain kind of a cloth or a blanket that would help straighten out its bones. And we're going to allow to do this on Shabbos, and it's not a violation of refuah. And again, the reason for this is because we're using a fabric and there's no shchika samimonim, also because it's necessary for the child's growth. Rav Papa Masni Bonim and Rav Zvid Masni Ben. Okay, now there are two girsos as to whether or not it's bonim in the plural, which means children. And it means that all these psukim that we allowed certain kinds of methods of healing, they refer to children, whereas Rav Zvid says that ben. In other words, ben means in the singular that he only accepted one of the various rulings and heterim. So the Gemara is going to ask, what is this all about? Rav Papa Masni Bonim, he has the plural Bonim. Vitravayu Masnaluhu Bi Ovin Bar Huna. In other words, whether we talk about knot therapy or we're talking about wrapping an infant, it's all in the name of Ovin Bar Huna. Rav Zvid Masni Ben, Kamaisa Masni Bi Ovin Bar Huna. With regard to the knot therapy, that was a statement that was transmitted by Ovin Bar Huna. However, Vahai, but the second ruling regarding wrapping the child in a blanket in order to straighten its bones, Masni Lo B'Rabba Barav Chana. In the name of Rabba Barav Chana, Tiyoma Rabba Barav Chana, Lefufe Yenuke B'Shabsa Shapir Mon, you straighten out the bones of the child. So again, once again, we have a long discussion here about the exact transmission, who said what. I have a suspicion, I can't prove this to you, that Ovin Bar Huna was considered the expert in various kinds of therapies, and therefore it was very important to clarify, at least according to Rav Papa, that these various statements were made and attributed to Ovin Bar Huna. Omar Abaye, again in the name of his mother, Omar Li Aim, it's not really his mother, as we said before, Kol Minyone Bishma De'ime. Remember we spoke about Lachushim. Lachushim, Lachash, means a kind of a whisper. He translates it here as incantations. But anyway, it means pronouncements that have a kind of medicinal effect. Maybe Midin Tefillah, I don't know. V'chol Kitre Bismola. And all knots should be tied on the left arm, which we saw earlier. The Omar Abaye, Omar Li Aim, Kol Minyone Dimafarshi Kidimafarshi. In other words, any of those lachushim, those formulas for prayers, have to be said a certain number of times. Udolomefarshi, and if we don't know exactly how many times you have to you're meant to repeat these lachushim, then the halacha is that, says Abaye, he heard from his mother, arboim v'chad zimni. There's some sort of secret to repeating these kind of formulas and these incantations 41 times. Now, I don't have any notes here on this. I'm going to try to do a little more research. It bothers my mind here. What are these lichushim and why are they so significant? How do they operate? And why do you have to repeat them 41 times? So if anybody has any information on that, please share it with me. Tana Rabbanan, and with this we'll end for today. Yotzim b'Even Tkuma b'Shabbos. Okay, we have a certain Even, a certain stone, which is called an Even Tkuma. And this stone is very helpful for her pregnancy. Again, I cannot tell you medically how this stone works and how it's effective, but it's a very, very hard stone. And if she carries this stone, apparently it prevents miscarriage, and therefore we're going to allow her to carry it on Shabbos. And Mishum Rabbi Meir Omru Af B'Mishkal Event Kuma V'lo Sheshpila Ela Shemin Shahipila. She hasn't had a miscarriage in the past. Ela Shematapil, we're afraid she might miscarriage. V'lo Sheibra, and even if she's not yet pregnant, El Shematis Aber V'Tapil, even if we have to suspect A, that she might become pregnant, and B, that she might Chas V'Shom have a miscarriage, nevertheless, we're going to allow this kind of Even Tkuma, and it's not considered a Masa, and it's permissible to go out in Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos. We'll stop here.